Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are stepping into, a really specific and I think fascinating intersection.
It really is.
I mean, I want you to imagine, if you will, two completely different worlds just colliding. On one side, you have the absolute wild west of the internet.
Right. Anonymous, decentralized, peer-to-peer networks.
The stuff of crypto anarchists. And then on the other side, you have the, you know, the buttoned-up, suit-and-tie world of industrial finance and government regulation.
It's a massive clash of cultures.
Right.
And usually, those two worlds try to stay as far away from each other as possible.
Of course.
The regulators, they view the decentralized web as a black market, and the decentralized web views regulators as, well, dinosaurs.
Exactly. But the source material we're unpacking today, specifically from a group called Dereticular and their work with an entity called Curb Cars, is trying to merge them.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about something called the Rios Sovereign Stack and the dual use node. And look, at first glance, reading through these documents, this sounds like a sci-fi novel. It's described as a civilization anchor. It involves hemp, autonomous robots, and cryptographic keys burned into silicon.
It does sound futuristic, almost like something out of a cyberpunk novel.
Right.
But if you actually look closely at the architecture and the reports, it's a very practical infrastructure project.
Right.
A very ambitious one, certainly. But it's grounded in real engineering.
It feels like cyberpunk meets John Deere.
That's surprisingly accurate. The core mission here, based on the reports we've read, is to solve the crisis of trust in global supply chains.
Okay.
They're trying to figure out how to take physical commodities, like a harvest of hemp in rural Uganda, and turn them into digital assets that a bank in New York can trust.
All without running afoul of the SEC or the CFTC.
Yeah, that's the tightrope walk.
Which is the holy grail of crypto, right? Real world assets. Everyone talks about it, but nobody seems to have figured out the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So let's unpack this. Because to get there, they have this concept they call blue collar AI.
Right. This comes from their report, The Blue Collar AI Opportunity. And the thesis is really compelling.
What is it?
They argue that industrial sectors, agriculture, mining, logistics, they generate massive amounts of physical value. We're talking heat, torque, harvest, energy.
Sure.
But they generate almost zero digital value.
They use this phrase, diesel to data. I love that.
It's the idea that right now, all that data just evaporates. A tractor runs for 10 hours, generates immense value, but the data of that work is just lost.
So blue-collar AI acts as a, what they call a translator layer.
Exactly. It's designed to capture that physical output and convert it into a verifiable digital asset.
And they aren't just talking theory here. They have specific apps outlined. The first one that caught my eye was WrenchOS.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it feels like a video game, but for work.
It's an augmented reality or AR maintenance platform. The use case they describe is taking a sovereign node technician.
Right, maybe a 19-year-old in South Phoenix or a rural worker without a 4-year degree.
Exactly. And giving them a headset. The AI overlays repair schematics onto a broken generator or a server rack.
So you don't need a master mechanic with 30 years of experience. You need a smart kid who can follow the floating green arrows.
Precisely. It's about upskilling the local workforce instantly to maintain high-tech infrastructure.
So instead of flying in an engineer from Germany,
the local technician fixes it with AI guidance.
Yeah.
But the flagship app, the one that really drives the economic model, is hemp-grade AI.
This is where that catchphrase, every stalk of hemp is a transaction, comes from. That really stuck with me.
It is the core economic engine. The concept is that biomass hemp, agricultural waste, it enters a gasifier to create energy. But before it does, it gets scanned.
Okay.
The AI analyzes the physics and chemistry of the bale, moisture, density, stock diameter. It turns that physical pile of waste into a bioenergy credit on a digital ledger.
So it turns the waste pile directly into a bank account balance.
That's the diesel to data moment. You're taking physical stuff that usually rots, and making it tradable financial value.
But there's a third app, SiteSite, which sounded a bit more intense.
It's a security application, but with a twist. They call it the Guardian. The problem with modern security cameras is that they usually stream everything to the cloud.
Right, to big tech servers or potentially to law enforcement databases.
Yeah, and that raises huge privacy concerns. Nobody wants to be watched all the time, especially in a private industrial setting.
So what's different here?
Site processes the video locally, on the node itself. It uses AI to distinguish between, say, a coyote, a thief, or a worker. And here's the kicker.
What's that?
No surveillance data goes to the cloud unless a crime is actually verified.
So it's privacy first security. That's a theme that keeps popping up. They want the benefits of big tech without the surveillance state.
Exactly.
But this brings us to the big technical hurdle. If you have this open, community-focused network, how do you stop it from messing up the serious financial data?
And this is where we transition from software to hardware. And this is probably the most critical part of their architecture. They call it the air gap in the box.
Yeah, the separation of concerns. Because apparently you can't just run a bank on the same hard drive where people are sharing memes or running decentralized code.
You absolutely cannot. Especially if you want to comply with the Genius Act and CFTC pilot programs mentioned in their compliance framework.
You have to prevent regulatory contagion.
Contagion, exactly. Like the unregulated stuff infecting the regulated stuff. If you have anonymous PDP traffic on the same drive as your KYC noter, your customer banking data, regulators will shut you down immediately.
You become a liability.
A huge one. Mm. So they solve this physically. The node has two distinct environments inside the chassis.
Okay, walk us through the specs. What's inside the box?
Think of it like a duplex. On one side, you have the industrial financial zone, which runs the hemp-grade AI.
Okay.
That stores data on a primary NVMe drive, 8 terabytes, fully encrypted with extra 4. That's for the serious stuff, farmer identities, financial ledgers, tax records.
The bank.
The bank. Then, completely separate, you have the public communication zone. This runs on a secondary drive, an STR-01.
Yeah.
And the source material notes a detail that I found hilarious, but very practical. This drive is physically labeled public and trusted.
That's literally written on the drive, public and trusted.
To prevent human error, yes. It uses a different file system, XFS, instead of XF4, and it stores the decentralized web data from networks like Freenet and Locutus.
So physically, the Wild West data can't touch the bank data. It's not just a firewall, it's separate hardware.
Correct.
But how do they secure the machine itself? Because if someone physically walks up to this node in a field in Uganda, what stops them from hacking it?
Silicon. They rely on a silicon root of trust, specifically a TPM 2.0 chip.
Okay, TPM, we hear about that in the laptop sometimes. What does it actually do here?
Right, so TPM stands for Trusted Platform Module. And what it does is generate these identity keys that, and this is the key part, that cannot be extracted from the hardware. The key lives and dies in that chip.
Meaning you can't just put the key on a USB drive and walk away with it.
Correct. And for a human to access the secure financial zone, they require a physical key as well, a SEC-01 YubiKey.
So you need the physical machine, the physical key, and the right encryption. It's multi-factor authentication on steroids.
And even inside the software, they use something called Sysbox Enterprise to create hard isolation. It literally jails the public traffic.
A jail. So even if a hacker compromises the public website, say, through a browser exploit,
they hit a wall. They can't jump over to the financial side.
It's like having a duplex where the wall between the units is made of solid steel.
Exactly. And this hardware setup is what allows them to solve that core conflict we touched on earlier, the clash between privacy and transparency.
This is the split ledger framework. I really liked the analogy they used here, the bank versus the library.
It's the best way to understand it. Regulators need privacy. They need to know who the farmer is for KYC and check for money laundering. But the buyers, the global market, they need transparency.
Right. They need to know the quality of the hemp or the energy output.
But the buyers don't necessarily need to know who grew it.
Just that it's good quality.
Precisely. So they split the data. The bank is the private ledger. It uses Horizon or Hyperledger. It stores the farmer's identity, their wallet address, the pricing.
And that's only for the banks and regulators.
Mm-hmm. Then the library is the public ledger, running on Freenet or Locutus. This stores the botanical metrics.
Like stalk diameter, moisture level.
And a rough location. A 10-kilometer radius geohash.
So everyone can see this batch of hemp is grade A, but they can't see it was grown by Steve and here's his bank account number.
Exactly. And there's a piece of middleware called the publisher bridge. It acts as a sanitizer. It strips out all the personal info, the PII, before pushing the botanical data to the public web.
It's a really elegant solution to a problem that usually stumps people. Now, here's where it gets really interesting to me, the hardware oracle. The documents talk about moving trust from humans to machines. Why is that such a big deal?
Well, think about the traditional way we grade commodities. A human inspector comes out to the farm. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they're incompetent.
Or maybe they can be bribed.
That's the one.
Yeah.
$100 to say this low-grade hemp is premium.
That's the garbage in problem. If the input data is bad, the blockchain just records a lie forever.
Precisely. The Rios solution is to remove the human. The machine scans the hemp. the TPM chip, that silicon root of trust we mentioned, it signs the data.
So the signature proves, mathematically, I am node number 4, and I saw this hemp at this time.
It creates a hardware root of trust. It is mathematical proof of physical reality. No human can intervene to change that grade before it hits the ledger.
That is wild. It's basically making the machine the notary public.
A notary that cannot be bribed. And this leads to a really important legal strategy they mentioned, common carrier status.
Right, because if you're hosting this library of public data, aren't you liable for what people put there?
Not if you structure it correctly. By using the air gap in the box and this encrypted public drive, the operator can claim they're just a common carrier, like an ISP.
They provide the pipes, but they can't see the water flowing through them.
Yep.
Exactly. They claim protection under DMCA Section 512 Safe Harbor. They're legally protected because they technically can't moderate the encrypted content on the public drive.
It's a very clever legal technical weave.
Hmm.
They're saying, we provide the infrastructure, we don't control the content.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have the apps, the hardware, and the legal framework.
Mm.
But how does this actually make money? Because this sounds expensive to build.
It is, but their business model is designed to be self-sustaining. And for the founders building these apps, they have a strategy called the double dip.
The double dip.
Yeah.
This is advice for people entering their Hack the Forge contest, right?
Yes. The strategy is, step one, you apply to Code Launch to get your tech built for free. Code Launch is an accelerator that pairs startups with dev teams.
So you get the prototype built without spending your own cash.
Right. Then step two, you use that exact same roadmap and partnership letter to apply for government grants.
Like the USDA, Department of Labor, NSF.
Exactly. So you use the contest to boost the grant application and the grant money to fund the rollout.
Right.
Synergy. And what about for the node operators, the people running these boxes in the fields?
The projections are quite specific. By 2028, they estimate a node operator could be making significant margins. They list revenue streams like hardware enablement fees, about $2,500 a pop for setting up new sensors.
Okay.
SaaS subscriptions at $500 a month, and attestation fees.
Micro fees.
Yeah, say $10 per batch of hemp scanned. It doesn't sound like much, but if you are processing an entire region's harvest, it adds up very quickly.
The goal is to transition from an R&D burn spending money to a scalable infrastructure provider with high margins.
Exactly.
And they mention specific places where this is happening. This isn't just hypothetical.
No, not at all. They reference Node 4 in Kabong, Uganda, which is an industrial agriculture site, and Node 6 in Arizona, which is focused on autonomous mobility.
So these are the test beds for this civilization anchor.
Mm-hmm. That's the term that really stuck with me.
It's a powerful image. The idea that this box, this node, it provides the internet, it provides financial services, and it provides market access.
It anchors the local community to the global economy.
But it does it on its own terms, with that physical and digital separation we talked about.
That is the key. It navigates complex global regulations, not by asking for permission, but by architecture. It separates the things that need to be regulated from the things that need to be free.
It's a future where trust isn't about a brand name. It's not about trusting a bank logo or a government stamp.
No, it's about cryptographic keys burned into silicon. It's trust verified by physics and math.
Which is, frankly, a little terrifying, but also incredibly helpful.
It changes the power dynamic. It empowers the edge, the farmer, the mechanic, rather than the center.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, here's the question I want to leave you with. We talked about the sovereign edge.
Mm-hmm.
If our physical infrastructure, our power generators, our food grading systems, our logistics hubs, if they all become capable of autonomous financial settlement, what happens to the middlemen?
The banks, the brokers, the inspectors.
Exactly. Are we ready for a world where a machine is the only notary we need? Where the tractor pays the mechanic and the harvest pays the farmer and the bank is just a piece of code on a hard drive?
It's a world where the institution is replaced by the architecture.
Something to think about the next time you see a field of hemp or a server rack. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.
See you next time.